following is a remastered version of the Pulse Gamecast, a production of Holosuite Media. Tune in to our live show every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Pulse Gamecast episode 25. As usual, I'm Gradol.
And I'm Jason.
Today's record date is, and I don't even know because I'm freaking tired.
Today's the 13th.
The 13th of May, 2014. What you been doing, Jay?
Well, after enjoying our silver episode, we've been, next week will be our half year, but this is our 25th episode, so there you go, right?
Right.
I've been playing some MechWarrior Online. Not doing as bad because now I've really started, now that they've been branching out a whole, they've been having those 50% off sales with everybody, you know, buying all their mechs really fast using their money, the MC. Yeah. So now that everybody's actually started branching out instead of everybody using the exact same mechs, whatever happened to be on sale that 1 month, you're starting to see a good mix and lances are starting to break out. Now you're having, you know, like your Charlie Lance will be all light mechs and your medium, you have a mix in your medium of Bravo Lance and your Alpha Lance will usually be heavy mix and command. So it's actually starting to look like Battletech again. And that being said, now that I'm actually playing my, you know, the Protector, the Orion, stuff like that, the way they're supposed to be, I got a Cataphract and Orion and a Misery when they had that super sale. And then I got that, I won that TS9 from playing that one weekend, the Thunderbolt. And I've still got the, I also bought, using just regular, you know, $1 million cash, whatever, I bought a Spider. So I've been kind of rotating in and out, and I'm really starting to learn how to play my mechs, and just now really starting to learn how to play the mechs the way they're supposed to be played. So I'm not, I went from a 0.25 up to like a 0.45 to a 0.50 kill death, so. Nice. I also played some Wildstar Beta, finally. And downloading that almost killed my monthly stipend. Oh my God. MediaCom's like, are you sure you want to download this? You're at 81%. So I did download it. I made a character. What's the thing that looks like a fox? The Auron?
Chua. Oh, is it Chua?
The Auron.
Yeah.
I made an Auron spell slinger kind of guy. Explorer, I believe. And I customized the crap out of him. You're right. I like it. It's a lot like Star Wars in that aspect. And I went through that first little part where you save the guy's wife.
Right.
And then I fell asleep at the keyboard because it was like midnight or one. So, but it looks like a lot of fun. It's easy to play. It's intuitive. And it didn't destroy my computer, even though I had it up, you know, kind of high on graphics. So far, I'm actually kind of pleased. I may actually subscribe to this for a little while if I like it.
Yeah. I also played some Wildstar as well. So is that all you've done? Have you left the ship and made it down to the planet yet?
Negative. I have not left the ship. Okay. I just gotten there and was talking to the doctor who saved the girl's life. And that's where, right there is where I stopped.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Let's see. I had a question about, the Misery mech. What exactly is that?
Ah, the Misery is a stalker, but it is a gun only stalker. It's a big gunboat. And it carries a Gauss cannon, I think an extended range PPC, no, extended range large laser, and then like four medium lasers. And I can't remember if it's got a AMS or not.
Wow.
But yeah, she's a beast. Now, she is not quick, but and anytime somebody sees her, she's kind of a tank. She's just shy of an assault mech. She's one of the heaviest heavies. And so when people see her, they try to go for the legs immediately to hobble her because that's where she hurts. Yeah. They shoot the knees.
Oh, man. So to me, so I'm assuming she looks exactly like that without the missile pods.
Yeah, she looks like a gray. It has an official gray paint scheme. It's like really ugly paint scheme, really dark and, you know, morbid. And it's got that big Gauss rifle coming right out of the nose. So it's not hard to guess what it is. You don't even have to hit the E key. You know how it's the Q key. If you hit the Q key, it lists everybody who's your target and what they're driving. You don't even need that. Funny. Oh, look at Misery. Boom.
Man. Let's see. So also, like I said, I've been playing Wildstar a little bit. Just, you know, as a side note, Jay, I don't know if you knew this. Every day you log in to the beta counts towards your mystery box. Did you know that?
I did not.
So when the game launches, it will keep track of how many days you have logged into the beta, and you'll get a mystery box, I think, for each day you've logged in. So just as a heads up.
That's cool.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just like your classic every other MMO out there. Who knows what's going to be in it? Could be a weapon or a, you know, crafting mat or something. But just as a heads up, even if you don't want to play, just log in for the day and zip back out. Let's see. So also, WildStar, I played some Mass Effect 3. I finished, of course, my last playthrough with FemShep Engineer, and I've restarted FemShep... Infiltrator, the stealthy sniper one. So I'm enjoying that. I also played a little bit of Batman Arkham Origins. I still haven't done the Cold Cold Heart DLC, but yeah, I'll get to it. It's just the game is so great as it is. If you're familiar with the game at all, I just 2 days ago just rescued. You can't see I'm doing air quotes right now, but I just rescued Alice from the Mad Hatter. That's where I'm at in the story. Loving that. And for the first time in months, I actually played a tiny, tiny little bit of SWTOR. Just kind of jumped in, took my Jedi Guardian around Tatooine. I mean, honestly, like maybe a half an hour. Just kind of reacquainted myself with the tune. And that's pretty much what I've done in gaming for the past week.
That was a lot of fun, though.
Yeah. It was okay. It was cool to get
back. I mean,
back
May the 4th,
it.
Right?
Right. I did log in and get my little R2 pet. I didn't even bring it out while I played. I totally forgot about it.
Aww.
Let's see. Let's move on to news. I put this in the show notes. It's not really gaming news, per se. But H.R. Giger, I think he was an architect initially. The artist who designed the Alien from the movie Alien, you know, Sigourney Weaver, all that. H.R. Giger died Monday. He was at his home in Zurich. He fell down his stairs and died as a result of injuries sustained. He was 74 years old. You know, I've talked about aliens a lot on the show, whether it's the movie Alien or Aliens. And I'm not going to say I'm a big fan of the games because there's only been a couple good Alien games out there, even though I am waiting for Alien Isolation. Can't wait for that. So that's kind of the tie-in to gaming and why it's in there. And quite frankly, you know, Aliens, the movie, has sort of kind of inundated itself in pop culture to an extent with, I'm not going to say there were never Space Marines before Aliens, because of course there were with Games Workshop. But it seems, you know, of course, Starship Troopers and Armor, you know, books from a long time ago. But it seems to me anyways that after Aliens came out, the concept of a Marine or Army unit based in space flying around, you know, fighting aliens or bad guys in space seemed a little more prevalent. So, like I said, maybe it's a stretch, but that's kind of our tie into gaming news on that little bit.
Well, and don't forget now, and let me just throw this out here, just to toss it out. The modern generation may remember, or at least not the modern generation, the one just shifted before that, may remember Species. That was completely H.R. Giger right there.
Yeah.
Species was Natasha Henstridge, because he made gothic horror. Well, he made horror look sexy, because he was very, you know, buggish. The pods and the you know what I'm talking about, the veins running down the ship that's covered in silicone and it's sticky and drippy. That whole concept was him. But even prior to Alien, what's his name? Ridley Scott was drawn to him because of his paintings prior to that, where females were highly depicted half nude or half clothed as these aliens, and it's just disgustingly beautiful.
They're in the embrace of the alien or something like that.
Yeah. Exactly, or metamorphosized.
Right. So, like I said, I don't know. I don't think, honestly, he's had a lot to do with the recent Alien stuff, whether the game or movies, but, you know. There we go. That's that. As usual, Jay's been filling up our Google Doc with all kinds of stuff, and I've been severely lacking on that. So I'll finish up my little bit of news, and it's also a little bit of WildStar news. The devs this week released a video of what raids are going to look like. In-the-game raids. These are the big level 50, I think. Level 50 raids. It is chaotic as crap. I suggest, you know, if you have any interest in raiding in WildStar, take a look at these videos. Or if you just raid in any other game and you want to see what a truly crazy raid looks like, check out this video. Remember, WildStar uses telegraphs on the ground to show you where the attacks are going, yours and the enemies. And man, this video is nuts. I can't even imagine trying to heal this raid. I have no idea. I have no information for you as far as what the raid is. As is typical with WildStar, it's some kind of huge, gigantic robot thing. Yeah, and there's just stuff blasting everywhere. And I mean, you know, his attacks like circle the ground.
It's kind of wowish.
Yeah, to an extent, but you know, with all the raiding that I've done in WoW, I have to say that WoW never had anything like this. You know, WoW, and that's funny actually you said that, because the devs on this video say, now this is what they say, we'll see. They say you're not going to be able to go to a website and get the walkthrough of the boss battle. It's just not going to happen. It's not planned. It's AI. You know, oh, after 5 minutes and 31 seconds, the boss drops a fireball here, 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 and here. Avoid that. None of that crap. It's AI bosses. It's dynamic. It's fluid. The battle's going to move. The boss is going to know where the tank is. The boss is going to know where the, you know, the espers and the spell slingers who stand still to cast, where they're congregating, and he's going to drop a big bomb on top of them. So it's going to be something else. It
sounds like
cool.
The devs are trying to punk your leak people.
Right. Well, you know, people, oh, a new game released. I'm going to be level 50 in 24 hours, and then we're going to raid and bust the game. And
no, man, that's just the Russians.
Yeah, right, huh? So, yeah, we'll see. But, yeah, check the video out. I mean, even if you have no interest in WildStar, it's neat just to see how crazy it's going to be. Let's move on. Jay's got some news. Why don't you take it from here?
All right. I'm not going to monologue like last week now. I'm just messing with you. Okay, so for all you people who say all we care about is PS4 and PS3. And Sony, and yeah, all things that are cool Sony, and yeah, not man. Xbox. Yeah. So I'm just kidding.
Okay.
Well, for all those people, we do keep up with Xbox news, and for once, I've got something good to say about Bill Gates' little brainchild here. They actually have stated this after, well, two good things, actually. One, the Xbox will be shipping Kinect-free for $399, meaning if you don't plan on using the Kinect, you can purchase an Xbox One for $399 starting June 9th. That is actually good news, because $100-something off the price is good news. And if you want to, you know, ease your way into it, that's good. And anything, you know, to get mom to get you that thing, because I know half the kids who own them still have their moms pay for it. So that being said, good luck, guys. Now, here's the thing for the rest of us. If you have an Xbox schema up to this point, you know, a subscription, you know, that we've been laughing and pointing that, you know, haha, PS4 gets all that for free, PS3 gets all that for free, and then PS4 started charging a subscription. Well, Xbox did a backstep and said, neener, neener. So now, Xbox will let you stream Netflix and things like Hulu, YouTube, stuff like that, that you used to have to pay for to have the gold service. They're going to allow that for free, meaning that people who pay $60 will get, you know, bonus plus things, but it will no longer block you from getting content that basically you're already paying for. In other words, like, you have to still own a subscription to Netflix to use it, which is $7.99 a month, I think, basic. But that being said, they're not going to charge you. Xbox, the company, is not going to charge you to stream Netflix onto your Xbox. So you don't have to have the gold subscription to do that anymore. And that's really kind of a showstopper with a lot of people when they look and see, well, look, I can get, you know, Netflix streamed to my cell phone. I can get Netflix streamed to PlayStation. I can get Netflix to a daggum Roku, you know, free. So why am I playing for it on an Xbox if that happens to be one of the only things you're using? So anyway, that being said, hats off to you. As far as I know, they said let me see here. Blah, 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 blah. I went looking for it and I couldn't find it, but they said that it'll allow Microsoft to be competitive with Sony and Nintendo, blah, 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 who, you know, let everything stream. But they didn't give an exact date as to when that's going to kick in. So that being said, hats off to you for actually doing the right thing at the right time. So there you go. Mm.
Yeah, that's I didn't know that, honestly, about Xbox, that you had to have a gold membership to stream that stuff. That's crazy.
Yep, and so the guys who I work with who are constantly laughing about my podcast are no longer laughing because every one of them are Xbox owners and they all own Apple. So there you go. All right, you Kool-Aid drinkers.
Right.
All right, that being said, let's move on a little bit to Minecraft. So lately people at Holosuite have been kind of into this Minecraft thing. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I have, and I don't get it.
Yeah, so my 10-year-old son plays, and I had to learn it because, you know, I'm watching all the YouTube videos on his iPhone of, do you like my diamond sword, and all these, you know, I'm like, come on, man, please, anything other than this. But no, he likes it, so I had to get into it. Well, I'm looking around for some stories earlier this week, and I actually, when I say this week, I couldn't find anything, and then today I found that this thing about where Denmark went out and created its own server with its own, well, city, basically, its own continent. And, they were, like, putting out to people, log on, you know, come see what we've built. And I'm talking about, like, government-sponsored here. They put a one-to-one scale replica of the country online, okay? Now, it's not that big, but let's just say that that's impressive. So they had several large towns. And, you know, obviously one-to-one scale. So they said, please, you know, show kindness, walk around, see what we've built. And who were the first people to log on and blow it up? America. So a group of, I don't know, do you want to say vandals? American Minecraft vandals?
All right.
According to the Register, which is a British feed that I like to read every once in a while because of their take on things. They're really funny. According to them, a group of American vandals got onto the server, blew like level 3 of the towns, and then planted American flags everywhere all over the place. So, wow. I mean, first of all, the country data is a 1 terabyte download. So every one of the guys who did this had to be, you know, this had to have been a concerted effort. You know, this wasn't a weekend, let's get drunk and do it thing. But, in a way, I'm sad, and in a way, it's funny, and in a way, you know, you just want to go, really, guy? So, I guess the first strike in cyber terrorism blowing up another country belongs to America. Good way to go, guys. Thanks.
That's funny.
I know, it's crazy, but there you go. So, Minecraft does not promote violence at all.
Right.
So, the real estate boom, right?
That's funny.
GTA 5. For all of you thugs out there, and I'm guessing at the sales volume here, it's all of you. They sold 33 million units this week. 33 million units. That's amazing. Take-Two announced that on their fiscal report for 2014, 33 million units of auto were sold. It was the best-selling game of 2013. And they have surpassed the 1 billion in its first 3 days. And now that it's, you know, shipped 32.5 million copies of Grand Theft Auto 5, basically 30 million, it doesn't look like it's going to stop the franchise anytime soon. But I had to report this because I'm thinking to myself, all those moms and, you know, parents out there who are like, you know, I don't want violence. I don't want my kids. 33 million units. Who bought all of those games for their kids?
Jeez.
I mean, go ahead.
I'm sorry. That number you said this week?
Yes.
33 million this week?
They topped the 33 million copies sold.
Oh, I thought you meant like in the past 7 days they've sold 33 million.
No, they finally topped.
I was going to say, holy crap.
No, they finally topped the 33 million. But, I mean, 33 million copies, man.
Yeah.
That's like that's basically they topped out the markets in North America, Latin America, and Europe combined. Period.
I gotcha.
No one has done that yet.
And the game hasn't dropped on PC yet.
That's exactly. That's my point. I'm like, these are just consoles. These are the kids that are playing these, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, most of your PC players, those are your mid-range, you know, typical 25 to, you know, 38 male dominated society, because they're paying a top dollar for gaming machines, you know?
Right.
The other ones tend to be more entertainment machines that are set at home and or in a younger kid's bedroom. So 33 million copies, man.
Right.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
It's not going away, so there you go, right?
Yeah.
And just remember, hit the hooker and get your money back. So there you go.
Is that still in the game even?
I would think it has to be. There's no way they'd take that out. I mean, that's the original. I'm still playing that on Steam.
Go ahead.
No, I forgot to put that in the show notes today, and I was going to run over that before we got to geeky stuff. I didn't know if I'd told you this. Steam, 2 days ago, released their Linux OS, Steam OS. You can download it yourself and put it on a Linux-based machine as long as it's a Intel-based NVIDIA video card with at least 4 gigs of memory and half a terabyte of hard drive space. It's based off Debian Linux. It's free, and it's the Steam OS that's going to come out on the new Steam boxes that we were talking about earlier this year.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they've released it legitimately.
Cool. Do you quick throw you for the curve question? Because I never look up this stuff. Do you know if they've added more games for Linux on Steam? Because I know
they
had a lot, but I know they didn't have everything that
they've been steadily adding the portfolio, and that's not only just because of that, but because of the Shield sales that NVIDIA. See, they've partnered up with NVIDIA on this. That's the reason AMD and Radeon's kind of getting left in the dirt. They are going to support it, but not right now. They've got everything towards Intel, NVIDIA, the matchup, you know, the super embed people. But that Shield that they've produced for $200. Basically, you can't put the Steam OS working inside of a Windows application, but Windows will stream to a Steam-based thing. Now, up until now, they've been saying it's Ubuntu, right? You got to have Ubuntu 12.0 for LTS, I think. But this is based off Debian, and the reason it's based off Debian is because they don't want an open source. They want a closed source that they can control, you know, the packages that are involved and things like that. But that being said, they're really looking towards content creation and content streaming. They know where their bread's buttered, you know? So, Origin, kiss it goodbye.
Yeah, well, Origin, you know, man, I don't know. It's EA. It's nothing we haven't said before. You know, since you brought it up, just because you brought it up, you know, I've been playing Mass Effect 3, which is an EA game, EA and BioWare. So whenever you start Mass Effect, it automatically starts Origin. And Origin, to an extent, is like Raptor in that it keeps track of achievements earned in-game. And when you earn achievements through Origin, you gain Origin points. And you were supposed to have been able to spend those Origin points on things. Games, upgrades, DLC, and that just never...
Yeah, you should go spend it on Plants vs. Zombies.
Yeah, well, you know, that's their freebie right now. And it is a good game. It's a lane defense kind of game if you like that, which I do. It is a good game. But I'm just saying, you know, EA, you really dropped the ball, and that's why Origin is going away, because you sucked.
Yep.
And I've got like 2,000, 2,200, somewhere in that neighborhood, Origin points just sitting there that I'm not able to spend.
I'm going to get you an Origin decoder ring.
Ah, there you go. It's funny. Can I complain about something for a minute?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
So I should have put this in the intro, and Jay and I talked about this last week. Today, May 13th, 2014, is day 14 of my inability to log into Guild Wars 2. Now, I talked about this last week with Jay off the show. Apparently, April 30th, an IP address from China, or no, this was the IP address from Austin, which I'm assuming Austin, Texas, tried to access my Guild Wars 2 account. Since then, I have not been able to log in. And I have been shooting emails back and forth with, you know, tech support for ArenaNet, who does Guild Wars 2. And they can't figure it out. I don't know what is going on. But, you know, Jay and I spoke off the air. I know he's played a little bit, but he, you know, if you don't mind me saying, you've pretty much said that you will not go back to Guild Wars 2 because of the way tech support screwed you over.
Yeah. I was, that someone had hacked my account and used my guy for gold, basically, you know, gold farming and transport of in-game purchases. And right. As such, they, you know, kind of halted my account. And even though I cleared it up with them, they didn't get back any of this. Because my character, that particular character, had you know, a mid-range worth of stuff. But my point is I'd handmade some of my own armor and, you know, the weapons I'd done crafting and all that. Mm-hmm. And I lost all that. And they would not only not replace it, but they were like, you know, and you're lucky you're still playing with us. And I'm like, really?
Jeez.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, I'll play it if, like, friends are playing, but I would never voluntarily just, oh, I'm not doing anything else.
Right. And, you know, we've sent emails back and forth, and I've gotten emails that said, oh, thanks for being patient. We're going to escalate your problem, da-da-da-da-da. Now they're not even responding. And, you know, you're hearing me say sending emails to tech support. That's because ArenaNet does not have a phone number for you to call. You have to do everything through their website, through email with tech support. It's just a huge pain in the ass. You know, Guild Wars 2, it's a pretty good game. But just keep in mind that if you are going to play it, this is potentially something you're going to have to deal with. If you ever need tech support, it's all going to have to be through email. And there are different levels of tech support. You know, the first guy that reads your email isn't necessarily going to be able to take care of you. So just keep it in mind. I am just about to the point where I'm like, you know, I could really use those 50 gigs of hard drive space and just uninstall.
And let me just throw this out there. And yep. I'm going to ask this question and you give me your honest answer. Mm-hmm. Try to throw away your ire for just a second.
Sure.
Do you think that if you had paid less or even the same amount for the game, but had to pay a subscription so that they would have people at ArenaNet to answer the phones, would that be worth it to you?
Not for Guild Wars.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know, because that's a lot of, you and I both know, having worked in the industry, the electronics industry and the service industry for electronics, for companies, large companies, the way you pay your techs are not considered a money generator. It's rare that a product support service is a money generator. Generally, sure. They're, you know, they're a money sink. You pay them to make your people happy, but it's kind of the cost of doing business.
Right.
Well, if you don't have a subscription base, the only thing you've got is the initial purchase of something. And once that new shiny wears off, then you better have something like microtransactions to keep it up. And I'm wondering if we're not seeing with Guild Wars 2 the price of not having a subscription fee. And when I say us, me and you, I'm sure there's a lot of people who are just thrilled with it. But you see where I'm going.
I do see where you're going with that. But now, I, of course, don't have figures. I'm not sure exact numbers. But I do know that Guild Wars 2 for ArenaNet is massively profitable because of the in-game store with microtransactions. I have seen that. They post record, I mean, not record. They do post massive earnings every year, every quarter. They make a ton of money. They make a ton of money based off buying your name changes or your gems. You know, if you play Guild Wars, you know what I'm talking about. And, you know, what also kind of sucks, and I know there's no way to differentiate necessarily, you know, I'm not one of these people who came in lately. You know, I bought the game when it launched. I paid $60.
Yep.
You know, I just, I get what you're saying, and I understand that, but it all comes back to doing, you know, good business and not. And this is not something I did. You know, I didn't give my account to a gold farmer who then jacked me over. You know, this is someone who hacked someone's account and or someone's server and got my information, and all I want is an answer. You know, honestly, what started it is when I tried to log in, it said username and password invalid. and you click on the little auto-generating password reset email, and it says sent, but I never got it. And the first tech I talked to through email said, okay, I've sent you an email, never got it. Okay, I've sent you an email, never got it. And this went on for like 5 emails, and I'm like, look, man, I'm not getting these emails, but I'm obviously getting your email, so I am receiving from ArenaNet. What's the deal? Oh, well, da-da-da. I'm like, are you tech support? Just reset my freaking password for me. I'm like, here's my serial number. It proves I bought the game. You know, I can give you credit card information because I have done in-game purchases before. You know, I can give you the last 4 of my credit card. And man, it's just been a freaking hassle. Like I said, those 50 gigs of hard drive space are looking better and better every day. But we'll see. We'll see. That's my whiny self-pity. Self-pity rant there for a minute. If you got nothing else, Jay, let's move on to geeky stuff.
Cool. All right. Well, anyone who's ever heard of tabletop gaming, I'm sure at this point has heard of tabletop. That would be Geek and Sundry, or the bastard child of the Guild. Basically, it's Will Wheaton and Felicia Day. Felicia Day being the goddess of geeks nowadays, and Will Wheaton being the Will Wheaton. it's Will Wheaton. Will Wheaton. So basically, just it's a hosted show about tabletop gaming, obviously, and so it was crowdfunded, right? And we're talking at $1.4 million. Was raised to support the program, which is an all-time crowdfunding record for most funds ever raised by a digital series, as reported by Forbes today.
Nice.
So, I mean, you've got to say there's some love going on for Felicia Day and Will Wheaton, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because we're constantly all up in the Kickstarters and crowdfunding and stuff like that. I have, other than what's his name with the new Roberts. You know which one I'm talking about? Yeah, Roberts. Thank you. Chris God, Roberts. I had a brain fart. Thank you.
Right.
Other than him, who could raise apparently more money than the Fed. This is the most money I've ever seen contributed, and I do mean that by every stretch of the imagination. $1.4 million raised for a television show. That's just awesome. So if anybody hasn't seen that, go see it. It's really awesome. They have their own website. Let me see where to, I'll put it in the show notes. I had it listed there, but I'm not gonna sit here and spell out everything for everybody. If you like tabletop gaming, and you probably know about this already, and this is just, you know, one of those things that icing on the cake, oh God, they really raised that much, and you can go brag to your friends who have no idea what you're talking about. So
I'm a big fan of tabletop, and I've talked about it on a couple different shows. I actually have, not many, but I have a couple of the games that they do on the shows, and I've actually watched the videos to learn how to play the game, so I can then go show, you know, my wife and our friends before we play. It's a good show. I like it. I like it a lot. I hate to say it. It's actually like the only thing I watch on Geek and Sundry is tabletop. I like Felicia Day. I just haven't really, honestly, I couldn't even tell you what other shows that she has on there on the channel. So, but yeah, that's a great show. I love tabletop.
Well, I mean, truthfully speaking, I've only watched, and this will show how, you know, my nerdcore credit just went down. I've only watched 2 episodes because, honestly speaking, I like Felicia Day, but I could choke Will Wheaton with a noose. Now, I like him. I think he's probably a really nice guy to meet, but he's inured himself into the geek lifestyle, interwoven between the characters that he made, between Star Trek and Big Bang Theory and the actual person he is, plus the stuff he did on the Guild. He's kind of so back and forth and back and forth. I have no idea what he'd be like in real life, and he's irritated me on a couple of his roles so much so that I wanted to bash him. So. At this point, I have no idea whether or not to like him or dislike him, so I've only watched 2 episodes. Now, I was impressed with the content of the show and how it's done, because it's kind of hard to pull off what they pull off. And that being said, you know, because, I mean, we produce a show, once a week.
Right.
And we don't even have to do, you know, the setup and the production gaffing, all that stuff that they do. But that being said, I'm impressed with the level of production and the full coverage that they have, being who they are, because I have no idea what kind of resource they had to draw on until I saw this story.
Right. You know, on a side note, I know a lot of people like you who don't like him because of stuff like that. Here's what I recommend you do. Now, I've never read any of his books, which are supposed to be phenomenal, but there's an episode of the podcast, The Nerdist, you know, Chris Hardwick.
Yeah.
And Chris Hardwick and Will Wheaton were actually roommates. Like, after Star Trek for Will, but before Chris became big and popular. And so one of the episodes, he has Will on, and they're talking about their days of being dirt-ass, well, not dirt-ass poor for Will, but kind of living like they were dirt-ass poor kids, you know, 19, 20-year-olds. Mm-hmm. Check that out. I highly recommend it, because you'll see that Will is actually a down-to-earth guy who is a voracious gamer. I mean, like, beaten up as a kid for being a nerd kind of thing, you know, that some of us went through.
Yeah, some of us.
Yeah. you know, he, I don't think it's any surprise, he hates Wesley. Hates Wesley. And talks about it at length on that podcast. You know, it was a job. He can't stand Wesley Crusher.
Nice.
I mean, it got so bad that he actually stopped. He I don't know if you know this, he moved to Kansas City at one point, like after Star Trek, because he was absolutely in love with I'm trying to remember what the technology was. It was some kind of voice processing something or another, or some sort of computer. Mm-hmm. And that's where the home base was in Kansas City. So he moves out there to become a sales rep for this company because he's such a big fan of it. So, you know, he left Hollywood to do this. And then after a year or two, he came back to L.A. And you know, he's done little things, but primarily, you know, he does his nerd stuff, and that's what he loves, and that's what he likes. Really, just check. I recommend listening to that episode of The Nerdist, because they're just back and forth. You see what, honestly, kind of a just down-to-earth guy he really is. Definitely, you know, especially Wesley Crusher, don't let that define.
Don't
let that set your opinion of Will Wheaton, because he seems to be a really nice guy.
Well, and like I said, had I met him at a con or something, my opinion would have probably been changed.
Yeah.
But I was saving up to go see Gygax, and then he died on me, and I was like, you bastard.
I know. I never got and to meet Gary.
Exactly. Either. I never got to go to Origin. I swung by a Dragon Con. I never went in. The only big cons I've been to were EuroCon, CoastCon, and a few of the other cons. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I would always wanted to save up my money, go to a big con with my wife, who, by the way, you know, if you met her, you'd be like, she's a con girl, really?
Yeah.
But yeah, she's used to go to cons like Dragon Con in Atlanta every year with her dad. He used to drag her out there because he's a sci-fi geek. But the point is she's met these people that I haven't met. She's met Anthony Daniels and, you know, half the cast of Star Trek and B5 and all these people. She's met them, and she's just all like, oh, yeah, you'd love it, Jason. So yeah. I need to do that and, you know, get over my own prejudices, my nerd prejudice. So, it's a double standard. We have them on our side.
Yeah. Well, that's how we are. If I can have a humble brag about Tracy, my wife. She went to, she was a guest panelist at a convention here in Houston called Space City Con. And she went up to get Nichelle Nichols' autograph, you know, Lieutenant Uhura from the original series. And while she was getting the autograph, Nichelle said, oh, so what are you doing here? Because she had a staff badge on, and my wife told her, oh, I'm here on behalf of NASA, da 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 da. And Nichelle was like, you work at NASA? Oh, yeah. She said, can I have your autograph? So my wife autographed something for Nichelle Nichols.
Wow.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
That's freaking awesome.
That is awesome. All right. Obviously, I'm about to just nerd out. And so let's move on to the next thing.
All right. Let me drop this last little bit here. We all like books here, nerds here.
Indeed.
And we're all Dungeons & Dragons fans. So if you want to get off the Vin Diesel thing for a little while and stop beating your friends over the head with it, that yes, it can be cool. There is a book out that was written not too long ago called Of Dice and Men, The Story of Dungeons & Dragons and the People Who Play It. Now, this is a kind of, I don't want to call it an under the radar thing, because a lot of people know about this book, but there's a lot of us who didn't. I just recently saw this, and it's on the Kindle hardcover, paperback, MP3, and Audible. You can get it on Amazon, cheap as dirt. The hardcover is only $17.86 using Prime shipping.
Nice.
So, yeah, and you can get the Audible book free with an Audible 30-day trial. Now, what's important here, a guy named David M. Ewalt, I'm going to read this book because I just read an excerpt, but this goes a lot deeper than your average, you know, redo over, you know, Gygax made, you know, it was one of the founders of Dungeons & Dragons back in the day, blah, 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 and just going through the standard, you know, this was released in 1974, blah, 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 decades before the internet and social media, Dungeons & Dragons inspired the original subcultures, you know. We know that. I mean, very few people even know that what the kids are playing at the beginning of E.T. Right. nowadays. But the point is the people who play it know that. But this book goes even deeper than that. This goes down to the development stages of Dungeons & Dragons. This goes all the way down to the hysteria, the satanic rituals, teen suicides, all that, the apotheosis of the modern video game industry from this. He also chronicles the history of the game's origins that are unknown to the hardcore players. And I mean, to the people that we play nowadays. And then he does a sociological impact and stuff like that. So, like I said, I want to read this because actually someone else turned me on to this. And then I was like, what? And I saw it mentioned again in an article that I was reading in the Forbes about the Kickstarter for Will Wheaton's thing. And when I saw it that second time, I was like, yes, a friend of mine, from the Navy, who I played with. Remember how we were talking about getting beat up at Dungeons and Dragons?
Oh, yeah.
Well, in my little town in Mississippi, coastal Mississippi, in the Bible Belt, it was tough to play D&D. Let's just put it that way. But, you know, understanding parents and asthma drove me there. That being said, I found a group of people who played with me. Well, we had a flagship person. We had no idea play Dungeons and Dragons. And he was our defensive line captain for our football team that won state champions that year. So we really didn't, after we met him, none of us got threatened anymore.
Yeah, that's cool.
But, and amazingly enough, his family was rich. He was the antithesis of everything Dungeons and Dragons that you'd expect. Big, huge, 6'2", 235 pound senior who loved every Saturday night, if he wasn't out sweating to, you know, work out for what he was doing defensive captain, which I believe he was an inside linebacker. He played Dungeons and Dragons with us. That's what we would do, man. And he had no fear about going up to the, you know, library on a, you know, Sunday afternoon, Saturday afternoon, whatever, and playing. So that's the kind of stuff that I'm talking about, you know, the sociological impact of this book and then hearing about it from four or five different things. It's important for us to understand the roots of all this, which goes back to what you were saying about Will Wheaton. You know, I don't know a lot about him, but I've already made some, you know, decisions. Maybe reading stuff about this will reopen my eyes as to, you know, the subculture that I come from.
Yeah, I was, while you were talking about this, I was looking at the Amazon page. That looks pretty cool. I think I'm going to pick that up on Kindle.
I think I am. I'm going to pick it up myself, but I might pick it up either on Audible or on paperback because I don't really do hardbacks anymore. But I mean, you know, 12 bucks for a paperback.
Yeah. Also, just real quick, on the bottom of the page, you know, if you've ever been to Amazon, who hasn't?
Mm-hmm.
It also has, you know, like people who bought this also looked at or bought this. And there's a book at the bottom there that's called Everything I Need to Know I Learned from Dungeons & Dragons. One woman's quest to trade self-help for elf help. Now, what this is a book by Shelley Mazenoble. This is her second book, which I've read and I liked it. And her first one's good too. And the first one's called, it's Confessions of a Part-Time Sorceress. What this is Shelley is a writer. And let's see, now, what is this, 2014, about 6-7 years ago, mm-hmm. She went to work for WotC, and she had never played Dungeons & Dragons. She didn't even know what it was, and she went to work for WotC. So the first book, Confessions of a Part-Time Sorceress, is her getting into an in-house game of D&D and learning the game. And it's a good book. It's a great read. And, of course, the second one is expanding upon that and how it changes her life. Not like it's a great epiphany, but you know, she looks at things a little differently. She treats people a little differently. You know, it gives her a better understanding of her job. So
that's
just
awesome.
Off the cuff there. Yeah, those are two good reads. I really like them. She's also on Facebook. She doesn't post much, but I know if you send something to her on Facebook, she will reply. She's a cool. Very down-to-earth person. I like her a lot. Shelley Mazenoble. Yeah, Confessions of a Part-Time Sorceress. It's a good book.
For all those times, I don't know about you, but sometimes you have that boss who tries to, and I'm just, you know, generally the manager of a department is a type A personality, a true type A, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they eat, sleep, success, 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 success. And they never seem to have enough books on it, or audiobooks, or how to speed read, or how to drink your coffee at 500 miles an hour without burning your tongue, or how to, you know, get your car up on the left wheel and get through the drive-through 10 seconds faster. But the point is I never, not a time where people who live their life that way, who grab their life by both hands and embrace it, don't want to share it. Well, you know, as I don't want to call us geeks, but as nerds or whatever you want to call us, we've introverted a lot, and seeing stuff like this, it's really good to go out and read it, and you know, spend the hour and a half that you would have spent, you know, boning up on the you know, whatever 3.5 rules that you would have read. Go read this and see how the sociological effect of people who weren't nerds to begin with are nerds now, or at least understand nerds and want to hang out with us. That being said, it opens you up as a person, allows you to communicate the ideas and the thoughts maybe that you don't normally have the ability to do, because not everybody has that gift, you know? Right. So I just think you're right. I hadn't seen these two books, and they look really good, actually. So I might pick those up and just have, you know, like a three shot there. Pick up all three of them, and then me and the wife will read them, because she loves reading books like this too, and she's got a nook, so maybe I can get it on that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
But there you go. So there's our Geek Corner, right?
Yes, indeed. Well, that's going to about wrap us up for this week. You can contact us at, we are at Pulse Gamecast on Twitter, or thepulsegamecast@gmail.com. You can find me on, Steam and PlayStation Network and Raptor under Teletech 77062.
And you can find me on Steam, Raptor, and PlayStation Network under Jason, JaySynn. And obviously, I think Blacklight is going to give you all our other information on the way out, right?
Indeed, that's right. Thanks for listening, guys. Have a good one.
Y'all take care.
Thanks for tuning in to tonight's broadcast of the Pulse Gamecast, a production of Holosuite Media. Join us next week at Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And be sure to check holosuitemedia.com, iTunes, and Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered shows and more. You can follow us on Twitter at the Pulse Gamecast. Or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to thepulsegamecast@gmail.com.